Hi there, my name is John Paul Kermy. I am a breathwork teacher. I train people on how to teach breathwork as well. I'm really excited to be doing this new podcast with my good friend Feldy called Hang Ups, where we're going to help you change your life. We're going to show you how to transform your life with different tools.
That's right. I'm John Feldman. I'm in a band called Goldfinger. John Paul taught me breathwork. It changed my life. I have struggled with anxiety and depression throughout my life, and I've gotten through it. This is a solution-based show. We're talking about solutions to problems today. Thanks, Ashton. Thank you for coming on board. We've done a few of these already, John Paul and I, and I think you've met John Paul at a couple of my parties probably, right?
Yeah.
I'm doing the Laird Hamilton Bulletproof lately with the MCT and the ghee butter. It supposedly dissolves the caffeine throughout your bloodstream slower. Yeah. So you have a longer caffeine high, I guess.
Yeah, the MCT oil and the Bulletproof coffee, right? Dave Asprey Bulletproof.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, I did a session with Dave.
Cheers.
Cheers, man. I rely on the regular coffee. I drink 3 cups in the morning and I try to write a song instantly.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I just wrote this kind of like, it has like a blackbird kind of bridge. I just had my first half a cup of coffee. I wanted to save my little buzz for our conversation. This is my first cup of coffee. And then I just picked up my acoustic guitar and wrote this kind of major, minor, Beatles-y bridge to it, you know? It's like when you're in a songwriting session and someone says, let's listen to some music and write a song like this. If I'm not in that headspace, it's just hard for me creatively to say, all right, I feel like writing like a somber Blackbird style song like I'm doing today, and someone comes in the studio and wants to write like a full up-tempo Slayer jam. I'm like, fuck, how do I get with that when I'm not in that state of mind? I guess you do what you do.
Do you prefer when people bring in full ideas or?
I mean, for me as a writer, I just like to start blank slate. And every session is different. Like kind of like what you and I did with the Fame on that Summer is a Curse song. I came in blank slate and you came in with the fucking full song. And I'm like, holy shit, this is a fucking epic song. And it's like, you know, I offer a little bit of help of maybe arrangement, but you have like a great idea. And then there's songs like Outer Space where I had sort of a fleshed out chorus and then we collectively put it together later. But I mean, it's always different, isn't it? Every song is different.
Every single time. That's the best part.
Ashton, you were saying you got to crank it out first thing in the morning, right? Do you feel like that's like your most creative time? Because I feel like if I do writing, I have to get it out first thing when I get up, like after I have my coffee. Otherwise, like after 2 hours, I'm toast.
Yeah, I have an afternoon slump. So I've been learning how to produce. So I rely on the first 3 hours, 4 hours of the day to write lyrics and melody and structures. Yeah. And then I voice memo it. And then when I'm no longer caffeinated all afternoon from about 12 to about 6, I'll try produce a demo because it's more technical. I'm just clicking around like tracking things and whatever. So, and then I get re-inspired at nighttime.
I have a secret weapon that I use in the afternoon and it's a float tank. Have you ever heard of these things? The sensory deprivation tank?
Yeah, all I have is an industrial freezer that I share with Matt Pauling, who I live with.
Oh, okay. I go in this float tank at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon when I want a nap, and it just drops you down like into theta brainwaves. And you can go in there and come up with all these crazy ideas. It's amazing. So it's 10 inches of water and 800 pounds of Epsom salt. And it's pitch black. Oh, okay. So it's crazy. So they say that 95% of your brain's input is taken up from your senses, gravity, hearing, seeing, and this turns off all your senses. So your brain has all this extra power. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. I'm super stoked I have it in the quarantine because otherwise I would literally be like Jack Nicholson in The Shining right now, just losing my mind.
Yeah. That's amazing, man. What are the brainwaves called that you mentioned just then?
Theta brainwaves. So like right before you fall asleep at night, you go into theta brainwaves. So you're not quite asleep and you're not quite awake. Mm-hmm. It's like a dream state, like you're half awake, half asleep. And it drops you right down into that. And so people who have been meditating for 20 years, you'll get to that place the first time in the tank.
That's incredible. I know with other creatives and songwriters, et cetera, they say they write best when they're just super tired. So I guess that's almost that middle space, that dream space.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like right before you fall asleep or like right when you're waking up, you're kind of half awake, half asleep. It's a different type of brainwave.
Yeah. And it's like saline water. It's like all salt, right?
Yeah, it's 800 pounds of Epsom salt, which is cool because Epsom salt takes all the inflammation out of your body. So like I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? And I'm an old dude and I'm fighting like 20-year-olds. The next day, if I don't go in the tank, I'm like, oh, I can't move. I'm so old. But I go in the tank and it takes all that inflammation out of my body and it relaxes all your muscles. And it's incredible. Like for recovery, like physically, mentally, emotionally, it totally recovers you. And people freak out when they see that I have it in my house. They're like, you have one of these things in your house? I'm like, well, people have hot tubs, right? Like you have a hot tub. I use this thing way more than people use their hot tub. Mm-hmm. And the benefits are bigger.
So I mean, that's a good conversation, honestly, because when you look around your house, once you're stuck in your house for months and months, you start to question the structure of why you have things and what do they actually do? What purpose do they serve? So I do look around, I go, my house is slowly changing. I mean, it's being engulfed by instruments now. You know, I look at the couch and I'm like, I never sit on this couch. I never do this. So I'm getting rid of things and replacing them with useful things for me to actually utilize in my space.
So the quarantine is making you re-examine like what's important and what's not important.
Yeah, totally, man.
That's
because everything's easier to stay entertained if things are useful and productive. So I kind of, I'm gardening. I'm like, I'm doing all types of stuff over here.
What was that studio that we did those live recordings in London that had that desk that was in the middle? Remember that huge console that was right in the middle of the room?
Yeah, man, that's Angel Studios.
That's what I imagine your house looks like now after you said
almost. I get a lot of complaints from my neighbors because for a little while I have a really tall ceiling in my living room and I did drum recordings out here for a little while, which didn't fly with the neighbors at all. I live next to a guy from Tool and even he was not stoked. So I have a soundproof basement now, which is awesome. It's where I do all my recordings.
Which guy from Tool?
I think it's the guitar player.
Adam.
I bet Adam. Yeah. He's just down here, I think.
We too. Electric Love Hogs took them on their first tour ever. So if you ever have a real conversation, say hello from me. He knows me.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's old cool.
Cool. Tool are fucking great. Really great band.
May I ask, how did you guys get acquainted with each other?
Yeah, I've known John Paul a long time. I mean, since basically when you stopped drinking. I mean, obviously, I remember one day talking with you about it, and the idea that being allergic to alcohol. And I think I used the joke that when I drink, I break out in handcuffs and institutions. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? just like some stupid joke. And John Paul came on tour with Goldfinger. I mean, he probably went back and forth for what, 2-3 years maybe on the road with us.
Yeah,
I hooked him up with Good Charlotte. He went on tour with Good Charlotte as well as like a trainer and spiritual guide or whatever you call it.
Sober coach, sober companion. So there's this weird world where sober coaches started out for rock stars. Like when they'd come out of rehab and they had to go out on the road and stay sober. And so I did this for a while with different people, not with Feldy. Feldy was more of a coach for me.
I mean, there was a time, it's funny because I'm sorry to interrupt John Paul, but I just want to real quick. I we've done his breath work, Ashton. Remember when we did those kind of mm-hmm. where we do one breath in your stomach and one breath in your lungs, that breathing that we do that John Paul has and the interesting full circle is, Matt Pauling, your roommate, who was my old engineer, actually recorded you doing the breathwork class that's online. That's who Ashton lives with. You remember Matt. I'm sure you remember Matt.
Yeah, so he was tweaked out in the studio like this because he was going so hard, but I didn't want to leave the microphone because we were recording it. So I was like, oh man, he's really tweaked out right now. And he was like,
with doing the breathwork.
Doing the breathing, yeah. Well, I mean, I think spirituality isn't like I'm not enlightened in any way, shape, or form. I'm just, I teach something that helps people a lot. You know, I still get angry. I'm still a jerk. I'm still these things. I'm a lot less of those things now. And because I have some practices like the breath work and meditation and the flow tank, and I do a lot of things to be calm and kind and gentle, right? And I'm not always that. Like, even the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a source for me to get out that other side, because I think people don't want to own that dark side of them. Like, I think we all have a dark side and a light side. And so What do you do with that dark side? Like, how do you channel that dark side? And I channel it through jiu-jitsu, and maybe you channel it through music or whatever. But I think denying it is a mistake. I think owning it and like harnessing it is key, right?
Yeah, I think especially when people are proclaiming they're woke or spiritually intact, I think it could go two ways. I often used to think in a similar way, how you articulated it. It's, you know, the fact that they're probably not, but it's not up to us to judge, I guess, but it does show that they're excited about it in some way. And they are curious, and they are thinking about changing their life and their perspectives. And I think that's cool. I think you got to get excited. I mean, it's probably the opening incubation stage of developing a new mindset and consciousness for yourself. And that's why you talk about it a lot. I only stopped drinking maybe 10 months ago. For the first 2 months is all I could tell people. Oh, I'm not drinking anymore. I'm so fucking excited, because I'd never not been hungover in about 10 years.
What happened? Like, what was happening towards the end that kind of, what was the impetus of you stopping?
Well, I'm narcissistic in many ways. So I couldn't sing. I started to get fat. I couldn't drum. And I was sick of myself. I was sick of being in pain. I wasn't physically able to be my usual self. And my relationships were faltering. I didn't trust myself. Therefore, other people didn't trust me. So I had to look at myself and be like, well, I used to be a positive impact to people. And I really liked that side of myself. I liked to brighten people's days up. And I found that fleeting at the time. So I wanted to change. So I've been ever since then. But what I'm saying is, when you're new to developing your consciousness in a spiritual way, I think you're probably just excited about it. That's why you say those things. Totally. And hopefully those people don't slip. That's the thing. We can't shoot them in the foot, because
well, that's the part that scares me. Like, people will put, I don't want anyone to put me on a pedestal. Like, I have a lot of students, right? And then it's like, yeah, you put me on a pedestal, and then like, I can still be a jerk. Like, I don't want to, you know? And then
yeah,
I thought you were the spiritual teacher. I'm like, nah, don't give me that label, you know? I read this, I was doing a little research on you, and I read this quote, and it said that sometimes you're at war with your mental state.
Oh.
Do you remember that? Do you remember saying that? Probably not. Like,
man, I've done literally thousands of interviews, and sometimes I crack and be real.
Yes.
To an extent that I probably shouldn't be.
Why? What's wrong with that?
Well, it allows people to place judgment on your current state of changing. And then they ask questions about it, but that's an old version of me where that came from. Or you said this, and that was 5 years ago when I was a shadow of myself. You know, I don't even know that person anymore. I built up a resilience and a toughness and a bravery to articulate how I'm actually feeling. And because I think that really helps people. Once I am no longer in this space, the run doesn't last forever, and the success doesn't last forever, and nor does the audience often. If I can look back and go, well, I was truthful with what I said and the pain and struggle I went through, and I was transparent with the people that enjoyed my music, I will feel more accomplished than I would if I was fake and pretended that everything was good all the time.
Yeah. That's really like evolved for someone your age. I mean, like, impressively evolved. Like, Feldy like is one of the best storytellers I've ever seen in my life. And what's great about it is he comes in, he's so honest in his story, so real and so raw, right? And people have said to me in my classes, like, I will show up at a class after driving on the 101 to the 405 to the 10. Like, I get there and I'm like, I almost just choked somebody out in the parking lot. But now I'm going to put gratitude and love in your heart. So don't worry about it. And people laugh like, oh my God, he's so real. Like, you know, whereas other meditation teachers are coming in and they're going, hello, everybody. I know Mercury is in retrograde today. And so one of the things that we wanted to find in this podcast was like, can we get people to be real? And like, what are you struggling with today? Like, when people come in for a session with me, I always just ask them, like, where do you feel stuck right now? Right. And it's right now. It's just right now. Like, where do you feel stuck right now? And like, let's go from there. So if I was to ask you that question, Where what would you say today? Like, where do you feel stuck today?
You know, these days, a lot of people, I'm focusing a lot on a lot of my lyrics that I'm writing at the moment. First of all, I'm writing songs on my own for the first time in a long time. Try to write once a day because honestly, I just want to go into my 30s with lyricism that's unique to me. And I'm not going to get there if I just don't turn the tap on and start flushing out all the bad stuff on my own and seeing where I get to. What I'm struggling with is remaining positive. I'm having really enlightening and positive time on my own. A lot of people say, how are you coping with the craziness that's happening at the moment? It's so terrible. Everything's so terrible. And it is from that perspective, but I'm trying to just look around. So I'm trying to be, not go along with a crowd mentality of this is a tragedy in your own personal life. It is a tragedy for humans. Individually, people can still have mission statements that are positive for themselves, if I'm making any sense.
You are. I mean, you made a conscious choice to get something big out of it. Yeah, of course, man.
And you're the fucking, dude, I was just thinking about like what you've been through in your life and how you started when we met and what your journey has been. And I consider you like, there's maybe five, I could count five people on this hand who I love as much as you, and John Paul's not one of them. And I love you so much, man. And for me, I have been pushing myself harder since this quarantine has gone on than I've pushed myself in a long time, trying as a writer and as a producer to step up whatever people are kind of giving me to help them with, whether I'm doing a Zoom call with a band or I'm writing a song on my own. I'm just trying to push myself. And for me, it's like, what does my daily routine look like? No matter how I feel when I wake up, whether I'm suicidal or homicidal, or I'm filled with anxiety or I'm depressed, or I wake up and I'm all right, I do the same thing no matter what. And that has been key since this quarantine has started for me. You know, I get up, I pray. I don't know what I pray to. I believe that there's some sort of power that's governing the universe that keeps us all floating around this rock at exactly the right miles per hour to keep us with gravity. I believe there's something out there. And I pray on my knees. I get in my 55 degree pool every day, no matter what. I meditate every day, no matter what. I work out every day, no matter what. And then at least there's some kind of consistency for my mental state, whatever's going on up here, like that there's some sort of barometer that I can say, okay, well, instead of being at a 10 depression level or 10 excited level, I can sort of be like around 6 or 7, no matter what, and never be too extreme. And for me, that's just been really key, having some kind of daily routine. And I think John Paul talks a lot about gratitude. It's not just about making a list for me anymore. And I'm really, really grateful. I mean, I was just thinking this morning when we were going to talk today, I'm thinking about, you know, our trip up to San Simeon, which is my favorite place in the world that you and I did. And just being in the car, listening to music and just hanging out, just you, me, and Luke. And that trip was so magic for me. And you coming to Hawaii when my family was there. I mean, you are literally, you're like a family member to me. You're like this, you know, this guy that I love so, so much. And I was just thinking like how grateful I am, and I can feel it. When I feel it in my heart, it means something. When I do my gratitude lists, I not only try and think about 10 things I'm grateful for, I try and actually feel it like in my heart. Like, why am I grateful for my dog? She makes me go for a run. She licks the top of my head whenever I put my minoxidil in to try and grow hair out of the fucking back of my head. Like, she's just like this crazy little animal. And I try and think and really feel it with my kids. I don't know, man. I love you so much. And I'm so grateful that we're just having a conversation, you know?
Love you too, man. That's very kind. No, it's for real. I think in terms of gratitude, I found out in the past couple of months, I'm a lot more simplistic than I thought. I don't need that much at all. I think a lot of people will discover that too, whilst they're just at home. Your life could be so abundant in such a simple way.
I think that, gratitude is a feeling, right? So for me, gratitude, when I'm grateful, it's like, thank you. Thank you for my lungs, right? Thank you for my imagination. Thank you for my heart. And I actually made a gratitude thing. I have it on YouTube. It's like a guided gratitude, because I was saying it right in the shower every day. I go, thank you for my feet. Thank you for my hands. And I'd start to bring in the emotion and like start to feel it. Like, thank you for my heart. Thank you for forgiveness. Thank you for kindness. Thank you for, you know, thank you for my kids. Like, start to feel it. And once I can bring that emotion in my body, then I'm feeling good, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. You could have been the person that taught me to speak to my own body. I don't know if you were, but you may have been.
I would love to take credit for that. Whether I was or wasn't, I'll take credit for that. You know, they have studies that show people who have multiple personalities that when they turn into the other personality, their eye color can actually change. Wow. So that's how powerful your belief system is. Your belief system, what you believe, can affect your physical body.
Mm-hmm. So what I was saying is with people that are starting to have symptoms of corona or anything like that, I had symptoms for about 3 weeks. And I think I haven't been tested for antibodies because I don't want to crowd the system at all. I'm okay. I'm good. Speaking to the lungs, speaking to the immune system and trying to remain positive internally so I don't just sit on the couch and get sick. Yeah, the belief system is very important for people to develop within themselves and trust how incredible they actually are.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to see it before it can happen. You have to see it in your mind's eye and start to believe it's going to happen. And I'm a strong believer in that. And I used to think all that stuff was gobbledygook, but it's my whole belief system has changed. Like, through the breath work and through other things that I found, it's like it's changed who I am. It's changed what I believe today.
Yeah, I think as well, acknowledging, you were saying you acknowledge your feet, you acknowledge whatever. That's a big part of recovering from depression too. Mm-hmm. I have been a very depressive human being for a very long time. And a lot of creatives are, and a lot of people are in general. But once I started to bring gratitude into my life and attempt to recover and be a happier human, you know, not drinking, and you actually do start to notice, you know, oh shit, I'm actually young. I'm still able to move. And I've never even looked at my hands or feet before and noticed how fucking incredible it is to even exist in the first place. So it's a part of recovering from depression, I guess, as well.
I've never struggled with depression. I know Feldy might speak better to this than me, but one of the things I've always heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, is that depression is about being stuck in the past and anxiety is about getting out in the future. And if you can get yourself right into this present moment right here where your feet are, then you're fine, right? Like right here, we're just talking, we're having the thing, Zoom, the computer, I'm breathing, my feet are here, like everything is fine in this moment. But if I start to get into my time machine and be like, well, my whole year is canceled out and all the events I was gonna, you know, I was like, I could start to get all worked up and anxious.
It's almost like this entity enters my body and it's like takes over this, like it's this thing that just happens and it doesn't feel like there's any rhyme or reason to it. I mean, in my experience with depression, it's just like this thing enters me and it's like this weight is just pushing down on my soul. And so for me, like I have to be consistent because I know I'm not going to be laying on my deathbed, hopefully many years from now, wishing, God, I wish I would have worked more. I wish I would have worried more. You know, I know it's going to be, I wish I would have spent more time with my kids. I wish I would have done the shit that I love more. I know when that time comes for me, I'm going to wish I did more of the stuff that I'm going to put off until after this project's done or until after this happens. And I'm sure some of it has to do with worrying about the future. But for me, it's like this entity that comes. And so I just don't fucking have time. I have to take the action. I can't think my way out of the depression. At least that's my experience. I guess the action has to be preceded by a thought, and I have to think, I'm going to get up, get in the pool, I'm going to get on the elliptical, I'm going to go boxing. I have to think that before I can actually do it, but I still have to, doing it is the most important thing. Taking the action is the most important thing for me to get out of it. And being around people for me is key. Like being locked up here, even on Zoom calls, has been so helpful. Like I feel like, holy shit, other people are in this thing with me. It's not just me. I'm not alone. And that is also really key for me to not feel like I'm doing this on my own. And I don't know, maybe you can speak to what your sort of daily routine is, Ashton, or what you do to get out of that hole. I don't know.
I've operated in that depressive space for years, but I could bring it down to three useful things, maybe. I mean, zooming out and observing your conscious mind is a really helpful tool for me. Looking at myself, okay, you're anxious, you're depressed, you're panicking, you're stressed, you're tired. Just observing yourself in the most clear and logical way possible and letting your logical mind do that. Saying to yourself, I'm depressed. all the other complicated feelings and dialogue in your mind, you can put them aside and just look at it and go, I'm depressed. What will make me feel better? And then treat yourself like a child to some extent. I need to exercise. I need to eat. I need to drink water like this. I need to stop doing these things because they make me more depressed. And discipline yourself. And over time, it will become second nature. But I also look at myself like sometimes like a bit of a test tube, like a science project, because I'm a touring musician. So I know I need X, X, and X for me to operate as organic matter, which could be a little disassociative, but it's important that you view yourself as something, a machine. Sometimes you need to keep moving in a healthy way. You need to keep operating, and you know what you need to operate properly. So you're an intelligent being. So do that. Don't ignore that. Take the steps every single day to operate in the best way that you know you can individually, and just be really, really dry with yourself. And that's what I do.
I love that inner dialogue. I was thinking about every time I go on stage or every time I have to speak at some event, I always say, I'm going to fucking kill this. In my mind, I say that I'm going to fucking kill this. And the first time I did it, I said, that's ridiculous, John. Like this, that inner dialogue that I have of just like you're talking about the good wolf or the bad wolf. Like, what are you going to feed? And then I said, I'm going to say it anyway. I'm just going to say it. You know, and I said, I'm going to fucking kill this. And all of a sudden the show's over and I killed it. And I'm like, it was great. And it's like that inner dialogue is so important. I'm so glad you touched on that.
That's one of the most brilliant things about consciousness. You can imagine what you want yourself to be or become.
Yeah. I think self-talk is everything. Like the most successful people on the planet, Will Smith is a big proponent of this too. Like the most successful people on the planet are have really good self-talk. It goes back to what we were talking about, which was your belief system. And one of the things you touched on, Ashton, I think was important is I read something. It's really important not to label it like I am depressed or I am angry. Instead saying something like I feel depressed right now, or I feel a little angry, because it's a feeling will pass. Right. But like, I am depressed. It's like you're now you've become that thing. You are that thing, right? So really being conscious of that self-talk, that language, like I feel a little depressed right now and I can get out of it. So acknowledging it and then moving on, or take, like John was saying, take an action to get into something to feel, to get better, to feel better, right? Because feelings come and go like clouds in the sky.
I like treating things as ideas as well. Everything is just an idea. You can live in that realm too. You know, it's an idea that I could feel better today, so why don't I explore it? Or, you know, because your life can become repetitive. You have time to explore ideas that you might think are ridiculous, even just for a couple of days. So if you don't think self-talk is real and it doesn't affect you, why not explore the idea for a minute and see if it works?
I think everybody's exploring self-talk right now in quarantine. Like I think everybody's going down that rabbit hole, because all the people who wouldn't do that normally are stuck inside and they don't have a choice. Right? There's no choice but to explore it at this moment. And it's important that we're talking about it. So it might help some people, right? To get some good self-talk. I'm curious, like what, Ashton, what's the one thing you're missing right now the most? Is there something you can put your finger on? Like, God, I really miss this
thing. Yeah. I mean, there's simple ideas of things that I miss, like performing in front of an audience. I'm a very aggressive drummer, a very athletic performer. It's a out of body kind of meditative state. In a way, I say to people, I black out when I play. when I see videos of myself playing drums, I don't even recognize myself. It's like an uncaged animal. I just lose my mind. Yeah. So I do miss that kind of flow state and enjoying that mindlessness when I perform. I miss being able to travel to Australia. You know, I obviously live in California. I can't even go back to Australia at the moment to see my family. It's obviously closed borders and everything. So that's the reality of the world. And that's a crazy reality. Coming to terms with that is something, you know, my mom says she misses me and when can she see me? And I don't know, you know, and that's the reality of the moment. Yeah. I miss the freedom of that. But in terms of day-to-day life, I have to say I'm keeping it pretty positive at the moment, and I'm not caught up in, I don't often think about what I miss. Is that strange?
No, I think that's smart. I probably shouldn't have brought it up. It was probably like a bad thing to bring up on my part, but I'm just curious. So like,
Not at all, mate. No, I just kind of a very forward motion. I used to be a swimmer, and a lady I worked with said, "Ah, you, all of you drummers are like sharks. You just keep moving forwards even when you're asleep." And I just like that. I just keep running forwards and I keep trying to create things. I'm just kind of crazy about that, especially in the age I'm at now. I'm 25, and three people who are very important to me have said, you know, you should be making the best art that you ever made right now. So don't worry about anything else and just keep honing in on your craft. I had to keep doing
producing
that.
Going.
It's good, man. When I was a kid, I was told by my parents that we are bad at computers. And so that stuck in my head forever until I was like, well, fuck this. I'm not scared of computers. I'm going to learn how to do all this, all the shortcuts, everything. So I've been learning, but I have a great, obviously, mentor. Matt Pauling has been teaching me everything he knows, and you taught him almost everything he knows as well. So I've been learning daily, and it's so inspiring. I feel like I'm at school, and I'm so bad at it, but I love it. And every time I produce a new song, it gets better, and I'm honing in on the things I'm interested in. So I set up a drum kit downstairs and I'm recording live drums, and that's so fulfilling to me. I often don't like to be a backseat driver in the studio and be like, oh, it should sound like this. And I don't want to sound like an idiot anymore. I want to know how to do that and actually hone in on what I want things to sound like to be a more fulfilled artist, I guess. So.
Yeah, you're really great at reading the room and reading people and knowing what people's moods are. So, I mean, that's such a great attribute for a producer to be able to tell when things are going straight or when you've got to pull back and say, let's rewrite this part. This part isn't quite set in stone yet. And you're such a great songwriter as well. So, I mean, knowing how to go forward enough to know when to go backwards to fix stuff, but not stop the momentum, you know, you're really good at that.
I don't think I want to produce bands or anything yet. I don't think that's for me.
I still have a job for today.
No, I think about the diversity and the energy that you have to deal with, the perspectives, the randomness of dealing with a new group.
Personalities.
Yeah, the personalities, the juggling act of being, because you're my favorite producer I've ever worked with, because you were a true mentor. You weren't biased. You were straightforward and accepting, and you had wisdom, but you still, the child is still alive inside. You're not dead inside. and that is so important, because you're playful, but you're intelligent and wise, and you know your craft, and you know how to accept an artist for what they are. And I think that's the true producer, not without even touching an instrument or anything. You're fantastic at channeling. And I just would like you to elaborate on that, really, for people to hear, because I think both of you, you know, John, you're a spiritual guide to some extent, and I know you don't like to overdo that, but you're obviously great at channeling people's truth, and you both are doing really interesting things with channeling people's perspectives and spirituality or creativity, and they're both quite similar, so maybe that's why you're friends deep down.
Well, thank you for the kind words. I was just thinking how hard it is to hear so many times. Like, I was sitting here, I was going to stop you like about four times when you were saying those things. I was just going to stop you because it's like so hard to hear, for me to take a compliment. It's just like, I just, you know, and maybe it goes back to like you're talking about your mom or whoever telling you you weren't going to be good at computers. And, you know, my father was never supportive of my career in music. I mean, it was a different era. My dad was from the older generation, and it was just like, you go to school and then you work really hard and then you die. And that was kind of the school that he came from. And he was really, I mean, he was a nuclear physicist, so he was the smartest man I'd ever met. And when I started becoming, you know, interested in music, I mean, he really tried to shut it down. And he only really said one time to me, he said, "You're never going to make it in music." He said that just once. And it's weird how that one time just stuck with me for so long. And when I started to have success in music with the Electric Love Hogs, you know, it was like, I had a really hard time letting it sink in. You know what I mean? Like the idea that like I was doing what I love and I was mm-hmm. actually making money and I didn't have to sell shoes for like that, whatever. That was about a 2-year window where I was making music in that band. And the older I get, and I think for me, and everyone's different, till I had my own kids, could I truly forgive my father? I mean, for me, and everyone's different. And I held that resentment for so fucking long. And then I had kids and I go, holy shit, this is the hardest goddamn thing I have ever done, ever in my life. And I understand now. I understand now why he would say things that he probably didn't even really mean. He may have said it off. And what the fuck did he know anyway? He's just a dude. But, you know, for me, a lot of life experience and being able to work with like, you know, I'll just say like fucking Craig Owens from Chiodos, who was like mm-hmm. taking massive amounts of drugs in the studio. And one day he'd be normal, like a normal human. The next day he's just sobbing in a ball and having to deal with those. You know, there's many of those experiences that I've had in my life. But had I not been sober, had I not been the age that I was, I would have probably lost it and just said, I quit. I'm not able to do this. But because of my own life experience, have I been able to say, how do I relate to what he's going through? Because I've mm-hmm. been through it. I've hit a bottom because of drugs and alcohol, and I know what that feels like. And so I can use my experience, strength, and hope to help him. And you know, sometimes I do have to leave the room, and it's really difficult, Ashton. And I know that you've worked with some difficult personalities, and I have as well. And how do we respond rather than react? And for me, it's all the shit I already talked about: meditation, prayer, you know, being able to take a deep breath instead of just saying the first thing. And I have said the first thing that's come to my head, and I've blown relationships because of it. And only mm-hmm. through enough of those experiences do I know, look, I don't want to do that anymore in my life. I want to have relationships that mean something that can last, you know, because it's more important for me to have friends than it is to have business relationships, you know, and that stuff takes practice, time, and age, I think.
I was just thinking when you talked about your father saying that to you, it's like, that's probably the reason why you are as successful as you are, because he said that to you. I mean, that's literally the gift that you got from that, him saying you're never going to make it and you going, I'm going to fucking prove you wrong. And I've been lucky enough to work with some of the most successful people on the planet. And so many of them have been successful because A, I'm going to prove this person wrong and this person wrong, but also that feeling of I'm not enough in some way. Like I've noticed that that's the thread that we all suffer from, this lie inside of us. Like I'm not enough. I'm not talented enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not rich enough. I'm not funny enough. I'm not hairy enough. Like I am not enough. And that I'm not enoughness is what drives people like you guys to be successful. It's like, if I can get this Grammy, I'll be enough. And then you get the fucking Grammy and then you're like, oh, that didn't fix this big hole inside of me.
Want the fucking Grammy.
Of course.
Still want the Grammy.
Once you get that Grammy, the next day is like the worst day, because I've worked with 4 Grammy winners, 4 Oscar winners. And I'll tell you, it's like, and a couple Olympians. And as soon as they get that statue, it's like, oh, this didn't fill the hole like that I worked for 20 years. And it's like, you think it's going to, but it doesn't. And that's when you're really screwed. It's like, oh, I got it. And now, like what now? Like what's next? And so what the beauty of that is it forces you to dive deeper, either deeper into some more meaning in your life or deeper into the bottle, one or the other. It's usually what happens. They go in those two directions. That's what I've seen. You know, I mean, Feldy, the beautiful thing about you is you've helped so many people, not just in work, but in life, like people who have nothing, you know, not people you're working with, but just people who are just, you know, trying to get sober and need help. And I've watched you just help anyone that asks for help. And for you to not be able to sit there and take in Ashton telling you what an amazing mentor, it's like, that's where the growth is for you now. It's like, can I just take this in? I mean, I had a hard time when I was doing the classes and people were like, you changed my life. And I was like, nah, I didn't do it. The breath work did it. You know, like it wasn't me like taking it in, like just hearing that and being okay with like, oh, wow. Like maybe I did help some people. Maybe I did help someone change their life. Like it takes a while to find that inside of yourself. I don't know. Maybe I went too far.
No, not at all. It's hard. It's hard to accept perspectives that you haven't heard before about yourself. When you never tell yourself that, it's almost like alien words.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Ashton and I have talked a lot about, you know, throughout the years, just about our experiences growing up. And I've heard stories that you've shared with me, Ashton, one-on-one, that are just, you know, heartbreaking. And I have a large collection of my own. And I think that there is something to the idea that you and I have come as far as we have based on the adversity that we've faced in our life, you know. And I've been to Australia a bunch, and I know your people, I know your mom, and I know your siblings. And it's like, you've got an amazing family and yet a challenging family, just like I do. It's like, I guess everybody has that, you know, the kind of give and take. What you've been through is definitely more to get to from where you started to where you are is a huge accomplishment, man.
Oh, mate, I don't know what's going on half the time. I see a lot of resistance, but I also see a lot of great people in my life now. So I'm actually the most content I've ever been, because a lot of people are teaching me rather than degressing me, or very supportive. And I'm happy to have friends like you, and I'm happy to be moving forwards like that shark I was talking about before. That's one of the best things about living in LA. A lot of people say that it gets to them, and see a lot of dreamers and productive people and people with great individual wisdom and stories to share if you manage to get the best of them. So I'm really grateful to be over here from Australia and even speak with you guys. I mean, this is the coolest thing I've done in weeks. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on, man. We loved having you. It's been amazing. You went there. Like, you, I'm impressed. I'm impressed with your wisdom at your age. It's mind blowing.
Oh, I don't know, man. I've been sitting alone a lot thinking. You got me at a good time.
I think you're levitating in that fire now. I don't know.
No, I'm just sitting in a pool of sweat. That's why I was late to this thing.
How was your vocal? Did you do your vocal lesson today?
Good, man. I've had to relearn how to sing. You remember I could sing really high? I used to be able to sing quite high. I mean, my favorite vocalist was Chris Cornell. I mean, he's such a superstar to me, and I loved his vocal tone and the way he delivered a vocal, and his lyricism was so truthful, and I really loved that guy. And if I could sing like anyone, it would be like him. So I'm working on that.
He was so effortless, wasn't he? Just an effortless singer.
And like relearning how to sing after mistreating my voice for a long time has been really interesting. So, that's a mission for me at the moment, something I'm working on daily.
I just imagine what it was like to record Hunger Strike when they were doing that that side project. What were they called?
Temple of the Dog.
Yeah, so Temple of the Dog. And I just listened to that record last week, and it's like they couldn't have spent that much time in the studio, because it was such like a side project in between tours for both Pearl Jam and for Soundgarden. When Chris Cornell comes in, you're just like, holy shit, man. And I can't imagine more than one or two takes. Like, the guy just like sang, like back in those days, recording on tape, you just had to sing. You couldn't just edit. There's no autotune.
I mean, for songs like Black Hole Sun, he recorded his own vocal. He said, everyone leave the room and I'm going to do this on my own. It's amazing, man.
I know. Yeah. When Fever was nominated for a Grammy, we were up against Chris, and I knew that Chris was going to win. He had just passed away, and his family, his wife and his kids took the award for him and spoke on his behalf. And it was arguably the most heartbreaking thing I have ever seen in my life. And I just think about my kids and I think about their future. And I was thinking about, you know, when we were talking about In Excess, you know, and Michael Hutchins and kind of his trajectory of life and how, you know, how suicide has had impacted his whole family. And it's just, man, it's such a tragedy. If you and I look at Chris Cornell, we look at the way he looks, the fucking, he's like a supermodel, you know, and his voice is like, I mean, who sings better than that, ever sung better than that guy? And the pain he must have been in, and how can I just focus on what's right instead of what's wrong? Because that, the power of that alone in my life has been endless, you know, how it can just change everything. If I focus on what is going right and I focus on what people do want to be in my life, rather than trying to make people like me that don't, like, that kind of shit is imperative for me.
Yeah. I mean, I heard that someone say that suicide doesn't take your pain away. It just gives it to the people who are around you that love you. And it's just so gnarly. I have a lot of personal experience with people that I've helped and that I've loved that have committed suicide. And it's, it's hard. You know, grief is a thing that gets, they say that the Chinese medicine, they say that grief and joy are in the lungs. And so breath work has been the only thing that's helped me move through that grief, breathing through that grief, because it gets stuck. You want to relive it and it's painful. And I mean, Chris Cornell is just, I Am the Highway. That song for me, I can just listen to that over and over in the shower and just think, God, how did he write those lyrics? Like, where did he come from with that? Like, where was he, what was he touching, like, to get there, to just go to that place? It's just such a heartbreak that we're never going to hear another song like that he's written like that again. You know, his kids are just never going to get to see him again. And I have this thing, this workshop that I used to do in LA, and I have it on a course now on my website, and it's called The Transformational Letter. And it was born out of this pain where someone I mentored for years committed suicide. And what you do is you write a letter to that person and you say everything you can't say to them, and you put it in the letter, everything you've never been able to say or can't say because they're gone, or they're just never going to hear you, even if they're alive. And then you write a letter back from that person to you, saying, and then you really discover like what it is you need, like what you're trying to get out of this person. Like, I've had people do it around their father who left when they were 8 or whatever. And then you do a big breathwork session afterwards and it clears it all out and it changes that relationship. And it's probably the most powerful thing that I do, that without a doubt, the transformational letter. And it's just like, and it was born out of this guy committing suicide, and I couldn't get past it. I didn't know how to get past the grief. And I felt, because I felt responsible for him. I felt that I was his mentor and I was his sponsor, and I was supposed to be looking out for him. And the truth is that we can't, you know, we can only help people so much. You know, we don't have that much power. But I was giving myself too much power. Just brought it down again. I should have had a bunch of coffee like you. This
I love you, Ashton. Thanks, buddy.
Are we done?
Yeah, dude, whatever, man. I love you, dude. And this has been super fun. And I just, mental health is such an important topic.
Well, it's not just one thing. Like, you do a whole routine. I have a whole routine too. Like, there's not just one thing. Like, breathwork helps. It's helped the most. But like, there's the flow tank, there's exercise, there's meditation, there's just the gratitude affirmations. There's so many things that I have to do to just be good some days. I don't know, like, I have this amazing life. I have 2 beautiful, healthy kids and a wife that loves me and a house and all this stuff. And then I sometimes go to sleep and I wake up in the morning, you know, my kids are fighting with each other and the dog is shit on the carpet and my wife is mad at me for something I did in her fucking dream that I have no control over. And I'm like, what happened to my life while I was asleep? I don't know. You know, it doesn't make any sense. And I have to get on track. I have to get my perception back in by meditating, by breathing, by floating, by exercise, like all these things I have to do to get my perception back on track. And I'm impressed that you've turned this whole quarantine thing, Ashton, into this like really positive experience for yourself, where you're learning shit, you're learning new skills, you're focusing on, you've set goals for yourself, which is huge, and you're being productive. And you know, Tony Robbins is a great thing. It's like, you don't have to do a lot. You just need to do a little something. Like, you need to grow a little bit every day.
You definitely do. Well, I feel great after being on here. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Ashton. You're the best.
No worries, guys. No, this has been great. And it will guarantee to help people. It's just nice to push the positivity out there. So yeah, thank you again. And thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks
for coming on. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
See you guys. Bye.